Good morning. It is 9:01, September 25, 2025. This is an informal hearing of the North Dakota Public Service Commission regarding case number PU-25-203, which is Otter Tail Power Company's application for approval of a thermal technology market energy rate section. And kind of a long title there. All three commissioners are here, and in a moment I'll turn it over to Commissioner Haugenhofer, his portfolio holder, and have everyone introduce themselves into the mic. But I just want to urge you all, like when you talk, identify yourself at the beginning so that someone listening to the recording or the broadcast knows who's talking as well as us. I want to emphasize that this is an informal hearing, so it involves only undisputed information. If anything comes up that is disputed factually, we will have to suspend this and set a formal hearing. I don't have other than that any opening comments to do, Commissioner Kringstad.
No, none for me.
Commissioner Haugenhofer, and I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. And thank you, Otter Tail, for coming here. How we'll conduct this is we'll just, before we have you present, we'll just go around the table, introduce yourself and your title. And as Commissioner Christman said, when you speak, if you could say who you are too and to that so they can understand. After introductions, we'll turn it over to you to go through. It looks like you have a very detailed PowerPoint here. And if you are so inclined as we go through it, for us to ask questions, commissioners and staff, if we have at that time. Okay, thank you. We'll start with Victor.
Victor Shook, PSC staff.
Lauren Donofrio, counsel for Otter Tail.
Amber Grenier, manager of regulatory economics for Otter Tail Power Company.
Chris Waltz, manager of our sales and implementation team at Otter Tail Power Company.
Todd Kadri, industrial services engineer, Otter Tail Power Company.
Leif Clark, commission staff.
Go ahead. Right. This is Amber Grenier, and today we're going to walk through some items that include a summary of the request in the filing, the purpose of the proposed thermal market energy pricing tariff, or TMEP, we like to call it, the opportunities that this tariff creates for new and existing customers, the target customer profile or eligibility under this tariff, the daily operations, the pricing components, the rider applicability, the requested treatment of the E2 allocation factor, and there's some tariff administration updates that would come along with this request, and then we'll recap with the request. So OTP is respectfully requesting the commission to approve the proposed TMEP tariff effective January 1st, 2026, exclude the non-firm / MISO portion of energy procured under TMEP from the EAR, or Energy Adjustment Rider, and the E2 allocation factor to protect other customers, approve necessary administrative and tariff updates, and allow some negotiated adders and mechanisms to ensure net system benefits, and this would be included in an ESA agreement or ESA to be filed with the commission. The thermal market energy pricing tariff addresses an emerging need for dedicated thermal storage customers to take service under an optional MISO market-based interruptible rate. The structure of the tariff allows a thermal storage customer to respond to market price signals within bounds of a specifically identified renewable generator to create and store thermal energy when market prices are low. Existing agricultural customers can obtain zero emission industrial heat or steam if desiring the product. They can lower their carbon intensity score related to their production process, allowing them to access broader markets for products they sell and increase profit potential. And some of these end-use customers may even qualify for federal tax credits, which further enhance profit potential.
Those tax credits weren't affected at all or had any end stop dates?
Sure. Yeah, there were tax credit changes as a result of the update with the Big Beautiful Bill, particularly in this space. I would say the one in particular, and by no means am I going to say that I'm the tax credit expert, but just knowing from our customers, probably the biggest tax credit here is called 45Z. And the 45Z tax credit was actually, there was clarification language provided within the Big Beautiful Bill that allows more applicability in this space and really centers around the biofuel space particularly is what that credit is designed to help and support. So I would say most of our existing customers are looking at that and the changes as an opportunity.
Okay. Thank you.
Lauren Donofrio. In addition to that, the Big Beautiful Bill also extended the tax credits because they were going to expire in, I can't remember now if it's 28 or 29, but they extended them out quite a few years.
So opportunities across OTP service territory. So you may have heard a new OTP customer, Big Stone Energy Storage Project, will take service under the TMEP tariff approved in South Dakota for a new facility coming online this fall. The BSESP will use its thermal storage technology to provide steam to Poet Biorefining, South Dakota ethanol plant that OTP serves in near its Big Stone plant. We have requested a similar TMEP tariff in Minnesota, and we are awaiting commission action. The Department of Commerce there in Minnesota has supported approval of the TMEP tariff. And it's been filed the same in all three states, so there's no differences there. Some key takeaways: offering TMEP in all states allows OTP to support economic development opportunities across our total service territory, and the technology could support any industrial process needing steam or heat. Customers eligible for this rate, we have very specific criteria for this. The customer needs to be a new greenfield thermal storage facility using a specified technology that uses electricity to create and store heat. There's a minimum demand of 25 megawatts, a load factor less than 50%. This load must be registered in MISO as a load modifying resource, so a significant portion of the load will be controllable. Service for the TMEP portion of the customer's usage needs to is aligned with and not exceeding the output of the identified wind or solar generator. This load would be a separate MISO asset owner and have their own CP node, and this creates a separation from Otter Tail's OTP node or pricing node. And then there would be no behind-the-meter generation except for emergency backup if needed.
Amber, can you explain or register in MISO what that process looks like and what is the time? Is it
Lauren, do you know those specifics? I don't know if I'm as familiar.
Lauren Donofrio. So when we have, there's two things that happen here. I mean, one is becoming an LMR, and that is done annually in the beginning of the year prior to that year's auction. It has to be done at that point because load that is registered in MISO as an LMR is load that we don't have to purchase capacity for. So they have to be registered at the beginning of the year prior to the auction in order for us to not have to plan for that non-firm load. The other piece of that is getting the separate asset owner. That is a really easy process. Actually, both are really a very easy process. There are a few things that have to happen just as far as making sure that everybody qualifies and MISO takes care of those things. But it's mostly done on a forms basis as opposed to an inspection basis for the load-modifying resources. For the separate asset owner, we just make a request of MISO and they assign it. And it, we would just receive a separate bill, essentially, for MISO. For any MISO charges that come out of service at that new node.
Okay. So daily operations for these customers will look a little different for them. So customers who elect this rate will submit their expected hourly load and acceptable pricing to OTP by 7 a.m. the day prior. This expected load will be consistent with the expected output of the specified wind or solar facility. OTP will then take that load provided by the customer and send it to MISO under the customer's specified CP node. And then OTP will receive and then deliver the day-ahead market pricing and the cleared volumes to the customer by 4 p.m. the day ahead. If the clearing price is above the acceptable price for an hour, or the customer's acceptable price, then the energy won't clear the market, and so they won't be able to run during that time.
The customer won't or the generator won't?
The customer.
Okay.
Yep. So that all happens the day ahead. And then the real time, the customer will manage its load consistent with, but not more than the output of the identified wind and solar facility. Any deviations in energy from what cleared in the day ahead and settled in the real time or what they actually use will be captured with that separate asset owner and CP node. And on notice, the customer will be requested to curtail its low to the firm demand or incur penalties. So, and basically control the TMEP usage down to zero.
So, before we started, I thought I kind of understood what was going on, but I'm getting more and more confused.
Okay.
What I thought was happening was this load was going to have kind of its own renewable generator close by,
mm-hmm.
and that you were going to provide electricity to them for emergency services and things like that, like any other customer, but for them to actually be doing what they're there to do, the big electricity usage, they were only going to do that when that generator was producing.
Yep.
And thus, what you said a few pages ago, within the bounds of specifically identified renewable generation.
Yep.
But then on the next page, you say no behind-the-meter generation except emergency backup. And that's like that sounds to me like exactly what I just described. And so can you explain that?
Go for it.
Sure. Yeah, so the identified resources would be existing front-of-the-meter resources that would be identified in MISO's footprint. So it's not a situation where there's a behind-the-meter resource that's being used to.
So that generator
yep.
has an SPP, we call it a generation transmission agreement. I don't know if it's the mm-hmm. same term. So they're in front of the meter, and thus they operate to serve this customer. But if this customer is not using energy or not using all they produce, that generator is also available for everybody else.
Yep.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think I got it now. Yep. Thank you.
And one other point on that. So the generator may be close by, but it may be anywhere within the MISO footprint.
Do you want to?
Go ahead, Lauren.
One of the ways that this works, and this is an hour requirement, this is more an issue. I mean, from our purposes, I suppose they could be anywhere on the system, but that's unlikely to occur because of the way the what has to happen for the CI score. So in order for especially our ethanol customers, for them to sell their products, for example, and if they want to sell their product in California, they have to have a CI score at a certain place. And there's a board out there, CARB. I can't even remember what CARB stands for, but the CARB board determines what is and is not qualifying for reducing the CI score. So they, according to CARB, they have to have a physical connection. They have to be directly connected, or as close as possible, directly connected to that renewable resource. So that, thus the nearby, I mean, in this particular instance, the point of interconnection for the generator and the point of interconnection for our customer are at the same spot on the system.
But the tariff wouldn't?
The tariff wouldn't require not, that. It would not require that, but functionally, that's pretty much how it's always going to go, because otherwise they won't get the benefit of having that connection and being able to sell into those markets.
Okay.
All right. We'll move on to the pricing and billing components. So the customer will have a firm load that will be billed at our standard LGS rate, which whatever they, if it's time of day or just the normal general service rate. Anything with above that firm load will be subject to the TMEP tariff. There's energy, and the firm load is kind of the baseline is what we call it. Anything above the baseline is TMEP. Anything above the baseline would be settled at MISO or in MISO at the CP node. So all MISO or NITS charges that this load causes will be funneled to this customer. It's pass-through of costs. Then there's some negotiated components to address incremental costs that would be documented in the ESA and brought before you to approve. This could include delivery facilities and or other any costs unique to the customer and contributions to the system costs. And then there's also the flat customer charge, $2.82 per month for admin and metering and communications. That is our the customer charge for, I think, our real-time pricing and SMEP tariffs today.
It's $2.82 and not
$282? $282. Did I say $2.82? I am sorry. I put in a... Thank you, Commissioner Hogan-Hoffert. There's no period, sorry. Yes, $282 per month. rider applicability, under the firm service, your standard riders all apply. Under the non-firm service or the TMEP portion of the bill, mandatory riders would not apply to that portion of the bill, and this is because it's a market-based rate. Are there any questions?
In the case that you're already aware of, is the firm service part, is that a pretty big load too for Otter Tail, or is it nothing to get excited about?
Sure. Yeah.
That was poorly put.
Chris Waltz, Otter Tail. You know, as Otter Tail looks at loads, I would generally say that the firm, you know, we think of a load qualifying for this tariff at greater than 25 megawatts. You know, the firm component parts are still going to be a significant load for Otter Tail. You know, as we think about what is a significant load for Otter Tail being a you know, serving rural communities, you know, really something in that, even that 1 megawatt type threshold is actually a pretty large load for Otter Tail Power. And so I would anticipate that, you know, customers qualifying for this tariff would be in that, you know, range of service in the single digit megawatts.
Like a light switch or something like that.
Yes, that's correct.
So because the load under the TMEP tariff is registered as an LMR with MISO, meaning it's fully curtailable, and therefore there's no capacity requirements for the load, and because the non-firm kilowatt hours and costs flow through separate MISO settlements to the customer, Otter Tail asks to exclude the non-firm energy or the TMEP energy from the E2 jurisdictional and class allocation factors. It prevents cost shifts to North Dakota if a customer were to come onto this rate in North Dakota, these costs from other jurisdiction. And the E2 really allocates certain generation resources jurisdictionally and by class. And because this load is pulling energy off of a non-OTP owned wind or solar generator, they're not relying on our generators to run. So paying towards them didn't seem appropriate. So if the rate is approved, there are these tariff administrative updates to other tariff sheets needed, as was outlined in Table 2 of the application. And this includes an update to the mandatory rider applicability matrix, the voluntary rider applicability matrix. There would be an update to the energy adjustment rider to exclude TMEP-related costs from the calculation and kilowatt hours as well. And then update the generation renewable environmental and interim riders to exclude forecasted revenues from rider calcs or exempt them from being applied to the TMEP energy. So a recap of the request, we respectfully request the commission to approve the proposed TMEP tariff effective January 1st, 2026. Exclude the non-firm or MISO portion of energy under TMEP from the EAR and E2 allocation factor calc to protect other customers. Approve necessary admin and tariff updates and allow negotiated adders or mechanisms to ensure net system benefits, which, again, would be included in an ESA agreement to be filed with the commission.
I didn't mean to hold up the show.
Just because she was going through, she was done with the recap.
Yep, that's the end of the presentation.
So go ahead with questions.
I was going to say, if you all have questions, you can go ahead first. I have a few, but.
Go ahead, Victor.
So a couple of kind of clarifying points. So does the tariff language require the customer to cover any transmission, transmission or distribution, you know, upgrades that are necessary to serve?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Does it require them to cover 100% of the cost, or is there some sort of offset? I know, you know, normal customer extensions, there's offset, but this is a little bit unique of a customer, so.
I'm trying to be very careful in how much I share. So there, if there were a fixed facility charge to the customer, what would happen on a – so the revenue that we would receive for that would fall under other revenue because it's not really necessarily tied to a tariff, and that revenue then is allocated to all three jurisdictions. And that we do that because our distribution facilities are allocated and our transmission facilities are allocated to all three states. We don't directly assign distribution or transmission. So because those costs were being allocated, it felt right to also any revenue that might be collected from the customer to cover those also be allocated to all three jurisdictions. Okay.
And that would be for both sides, both the firm and the interruptible portion of this?
The firm is just our standard retail.
Yep. Yep.
And that gets directly assigned to each jurisdiction because it's a retail, part of the retail rates. Any adder or additional revenue collected, that would be through the TMAP would be okay. Spread to all the other states.
You said revenue, but the cost and revenue.
Cost and revenue.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. I have another one. It left my head. So there are the MISO charges that will come through. As far as this renewable resource that would serve the load that would be interruptible, would this customer contract directly with that generator, or would Otter Tail contract on their behalf? I'm assuming there would be some sort of PPA arrangement.
Yeah, essentially the contracting arrangement, as we understand it, would largely be on the REC side of the equation with the generator, and it's about tracking those renewable energy credits as it pertains to what Lauren described for the CI component. So that RECs are a non-regulated marketplace. So we would foresee that customers would directly contract on RECs with the generator.
Okay. Yep. So they would contract for the RECs, but the energy they're actually using would just come from the general market.
Through your
billing from MISO at that node. Okay. That makes sense. And then the tariff would permit you to negotiate some sort of potential like transaction fee or something in addition to the customer charge to administer that, I would assume.
Yeah, there's really two components. One you've already highlighted, which is ensuring that the costs that a customer coming onto this tariff are recovered, right? So that would be the service extension costs. We need to make sure that these customers are adequately covering those costs for service. And that would be one part. And then the other part is ensuring that these loads also provide system net benefits. And so we described that as well in the filing. And that's really important with, again, providing those benefits when adding these types of loads to the system.
So sure. Sense.
Victor, can I jump in with one question while you're seeing if anything else comes to mind? So I just, one question I just want to verify with this is like, if this is approved, is it fair to say that essentially what we're doing is we're just kind of setting up a framework to operate from for potential customers,
yeah.
But If at some point a customer, this rate is approved and then a customer does go on, that the commission still basically retains the right to, when a customer comes on, review and approve the rates for said customer at a later time. Is that
correct?
Fair. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is just essentially asking to set up a framework.
Yeah.
Basically. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I was thinking about is this – This tariff seems very similar to MDU's rate 45, if you're familiar with it, and very different from your super large general service rate, which would be the next one most applicable. And both of those require approval of the actual electric service agreement, which is what you're saying this would also.
Correct.
That's all I have.
Hopefully you can answer. I mean, do you have any customers right now who might be looking in North Dakota for this rate? Or is that?
Sure, I can comment there. So we did make a couple of comments as far as discovery responses as well. But yes, we do have customers that are looking at this tariff and looking at North Dakota as in locations for doing a project, yeah.
For the transmission upgrades, so rather than requiring them to pay them up front, you're paying them and spreading them out and recovering them over time, but over how long?
From the customer specifically, or?
Yes.
When do you recall? I don't know.
So
did I misunderstand that from the filing?
No, you understand correctly. That is really a matter that ends up in the ESA that we negotiate, and that would come to the commission for approval. The length of time, typically, if we have a customer who has some significant costs associated with line extension or transmission upgrades or anything like that. And they sign a long-term contract, we would try to recover those costs over the period of the contract that's entered into with the customer. But that's, you know, that's a negotiation that we would have with each customer each time.
And so here's what concerns me, and you can just address this generally. You know, you said typically we would, you know, have that kind of the length of the contract or something like that. But we used to not see typically loads as big as we see sometimes setting up nowadays. Mm-hmm. And if something goes wrong, if that customer goes bankrupt and after a couple of years this no longer exists, there could be significant costs. And what kind of protections do the rest of your customers have that they're not going to get stuck with those?
Do you want to take that? Yeah, Chris Waltz again with Otter Tail Power. Excellent question. So when we're looking at projects, not just that would apply for this tariff, but really any large project at Otter Tail, that type of risk protection is needed. So what we do and work through are assessing and negotiating correct and appropriate financial assurances within the electric service agreement. So that would be shown and highlighted in the electric service agreement that would be filed with the commission when and if there's a project.
Okay, and then on page 9 of your filing, you mentioned that the customer can be curtailed, and their private generator. Well, no, you mentioned that it's fully curtailable if needed for system reliability. And so, that I think you affirmed this earlier, but this was something that was really, I guess, concerning to me. So then that generator can be used by the rest of the system, right? Did I understand you right earlier?
That is right.
Okay. And thus, it's ahead of the meter instead of behind the meter. Okay, just wanted to make sure I understood it right. Thank you.
So I'm still not tracking what technology would be applicable under the availability section. As the proposed tariff language specifically states, it would be available to customers and locations that use specific thermal storage technology. Is that intended to limit this to technology of the same sort as being used at Big Stone? Or why is it specific? Is there one technology? Does it have to be technology that is thermal in nature?
Yeah, excellent question. I think it might be helpful to go back to slide 4.
When I put the footer on, I somehow deleted the page numbers.
That's quite all right. I think we're on the right slide here just to talk through the question. And it's a good one. What we didn't want to do was limit this to a specific technology type in the space. But overarching is the kind of the overarching technology is that this energy, which is electrical in nature on one side, is essentially being stored thermally on the other. And that thermal storage of energy is being used to provide thermal energy to any type of kind of processing plant or processing facility. And so it really is that mechanic or that technology and anything in the space. There's different ways of doing that transfer of energy in the space, which that's not what we wanted to limit, that may benefit a particular company type versus another. We just wanted to set forth kind of the parameters for the technology really centering around the conversion from electrical energy to thermal, and then that thermal energy being provided to meet thermal process needs.
So I don't have a perfect awareness of where the industry is at with that, but to the best of your knowledge, are there any companies other than Antora Energy that currently are doing that?
Yes.
Okay. That answers a lot. Thanks.
Just a little bit further on there. So I'm glad Leif pointed that out. I had forgot about that piece. So it feels like we either need to go more specific or more generic with that, because we say it qualifies if it's a specific thermal resource or thermal storage resource, but it doesn't define what specific means. Mm-hmm. So either we need to say it must be a thermal storage resource, or we say we would take out the word specific is kind of odd.
Do you mind? Lauren D'Onofrio. The reason we have the word specific in there is that it is meant to modify the technology itself, that the technology is specifically for creating that thermal, that thermal energy. There are other processes that might have, you know, some ancillary benefit that way. But that's not the kind of technology we're looking for. We're looking for a technology that is specifically set up as a thermal battery, essentially. So that's why the word specific, because we didn't want this to, you know, somebody to go on this tariff who doesn't have that kind of technology, but they have a technology that has some small ancillary factor that kind of does this, as opposed to using a technology that is the purpose of which is this conversion.
So Well, really, what we're talking about is ethanol plants. Like, that's the only person that would.
No, I mean that is certainly a big one, but there's ethanol. There's really any process that uses steam as part of its process could use this technology. It is perfect for ethanol, absolutely. Sure. But there are other manufacturing processes that require steam, either for heat or for however they use steam in their manufacturing process. I'm not quite sure, but anybody could do that if they use that kind of process.
Does this envision or even allow Otter Tail to be the renewable generator, or was there something mentioned that that's a third-party situation?
Amber Grenier with Otter Tail. In the tariff language, we say a non-OTP-owned wind or solar generator.
And so the load is curtailable. They're kind of working somewhat in partnership with this third-party owned generator. If and you've clarified for me that if they're not needing this energy, that the energy from the generator can be used for MISO's load. But if your new load that this is for would like to use that energy, but MISO's really in a desperate situation, can you curtail them and use this renewable energy for the system? So you can curtail them whether they want to be curtailed or not.
Yep. Lauren Donofrio, there are limits in MISO to how many hours a generator can be limited. I think it's 400. I misspoke. My apologies. That a load can be curtailed as a load modifying resource of 400 hours?
Yeah, I think there's some, Chris Waltz with Otter Tail, there's going to be some changes I think that folks are probably aware of within MISO for the load modifying resource. And so these customers will need to meet those criteria. And that is part and parcel for the qualifications of the rate. But to answer your question specifically, Commissioner, yes, per the LMR criteria, you can control outside of the condition of whether or not the generator is available. Yep.
I guess, do you guys have a timeline in mind that we should, you'd like us to act on this one way or another that we need to be aware of?
In the request, we asked for January 1st, 2026 effective mm-hmm. date, so probably any time before that.
At least by Christmas, right?
Yes.
The staff or commissioners have any additional questions?
Okay. Do you have anything else you want to cover?
I have no idea.
Okay. Are there any objections to the evidence put together today?
No.
And I just thought of this. Because this was handed out, I never went to the confidential page. I think we should give that back to you, but we should keep the rest of it because the rest of it is an open record that we, at least I was following as you were going through it. So when I say the evidence presented today, I'm talking about not any confidential pages because we never got to them, but the rest of the handout. And the oral discussion, becoming part of the record upon which a decision will be made.
No objection.
No objection from staff.
Okay. So the evidence will become a part of the record upon which a decision will be made. Is there anything, any other matters for the record? With that, this informal hearing is closed. Thank you.